Hello and welcome to The Glories of Stories, a podcast where Father Greg Carlson, SJ, reveals the exciting stories and rare insights about the glorious books and artifacts in the Carlson Fable Collection at Creighton University. Today's podcast episode focuses on Spode tableware. According to a website of the company who currently holds the rights to the tableware, it was founded by Josiah Spode in 1770 in Stoke-on-Trent, England, and has been producing ceramicware for over 250 years.
I'm speaking of this at your suggestion, Brian, because there is a lovely pair of cabinets in the library set up displaying our Spode items. Very carefully curated, fascinating to walk by. I remembered, finally, I had made the suggestion to Thomas Hagstrom some time ago we could do Spode and maybe offered a phrase or two. He took it up and did it marvelously. It all started with a call from Barb Markussen in Glenwood, Iowa, in 2010, to Michael LaCroix, the director of Creighton's library, whom Barb asked, is this Carlson fellow on the up and up? And Michael was good enough to speak in my favor. I won't say whether he told the truth or not, but she had a magnificent, large 21-inch serving platter done by Spode in 1831 or so. Her husband had brought it back to her from the Barbados. He found it there as a used piece. He knew his wife had great taste in things like this, and so he brought it back to her on his lap in the airplane, protecting it. That had happened some years earlier. By this time in 2010, Barb was downsizing her home in Glenwood, Iowa, and called up wanting to have this platter go where it would be appreciated. And she thought of libraries who would collect something like this, and I am so grateful that she came across our name and mine. And so I drove out to Glenwood and received it on a Sunday afternoon from her. And as I may have indicated before in these conversations, had a perilous journey between her living room and my car, though she had wrapped it in bubble wrap, and I'm sure it would have bounced on the ground. Still, I was afraid I was going to trip and fall or drop it somehow.
Transferware was made in the 1800s by etching a copper plate with a design, inking the plate, and laying thin tissue paper over the ink. The tissue paper would absorb the ink pattern and then was carefully lifted off the plate and placed on the ceramic piece by a skilled artist, thus transferring the design from the copper plate to the ceramic piece. The piece was then glazed and fired in a kiln to set the design and protect it.
Well, it's well preserved. It has lasted with us. It has a magnificent, what they call, transferware pattern, because that's how this kind of tableware is produced. It generally has a highly floral pattern around the outside, whether it's a platter or a plate or a bowl. And then it has an illustration at the very center. In this case, a large illustration because it's such a large piece. The particular fable here is that of the horse and the mule that their owner was driving to market. The mule had all of the baggage on his back and was finding it tough going. So he said to the horse, can't you take some of this load? I'm having trouble with it. And the horse said, no, I'm the noble animal, you're the pack animal, it's your job, you do it. Well, they went on further, and the mule said, wait a minute, I really am struggling with this, can't you take some? And the horse said, no, I told you before, it's your job, do it. Well, the mule broke down and died on the road. What did the owner do? Well, he took the whole pack of baggage and put it on the back of the horse. And then, depending on how you tell this story, he took either the skin of the mule or the whole mule and put it on the back of the horse. that may suggest something to us about the way we may be helping ourselves when we offer help to someone else. One last comment on this. It's a beautiful meat-serving platter. I'm not sure how much I would have enjoyed a steak carved off of a roast sitting on a dead mule. The next step in this adventure, after I came to know Spode, I became aware of the way Spode was reproducing some of their Aesop collection of the 1830s. This happened in the 90s, and I became aware of it. We have something like 6 pieces that Spode has reproduced. There is a platter showing the fable of the dog and his shadow. That's the way it's referred to in fable circles. It's the great story about a dog who had a piece of meat and went off to eat it alone outside of town. Going out of town, he passed over a low bridge over some very clear, limpid water and looked down, the dog did, and saw another dog with another piece of meat. And, of course, lunged for that other piece of meat and in the process dropped his own. And, of course, the other dog he saw was a mirror image in the water. In one of the funniest representations I have seen of this fable, the dog in the water answers back to the dumb dog on the bridge, saying, "Now neither of us has anything to eat." It's a great fable about a human proclivity to lose what we have in being greedy for more. There are a number of plates that were done in this series by Spode in the 1990s. One of them, it's particularly dear to me, came from the widow of one of my best friends in high school. Jim Early's wife, Karen, is a delight, and ever since Jim died suddenly, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, when I get back to Milwaukee, I try to visit Karen for a lunch or a breakfast. She had me to her home on the most recent visit and said, "Wait here a minute," and brought out one of these Spode plates she had found. I don't know how she came by it. The plates are of 3 different colors, and they are one of the fables of a lion. It's the story about a lion and a fox. The lion, trying to be for once clever, lay down as though he were sick in his cave and had word go out that he was in his last days and all the animals should come and visit him. Well, they did, and the word got to the fox that he was expected also to come and pay his respects. He got near the door or the entranceway to the cave of the lion and looked carefully. The lion heard him coming and said, "Oh, friend fox, come in, come in." And the fox said, "Actually, I see a lot of hoof prints and paw prints going into your cave and none coming out. So I think I'll just stand out here and pay my respects." Of course, the lion was just luring beasts in there to offer their sympathy and then devouring them. We found in this present re-edition by Spode a platter almost directly imaging ours, and that has been valuable in showing off the collection in our rare books room, because I don't have the fear I would have with the original one from Bob Marcuson that I might drop it. They have done several other things. They have done mugs, and I'm just checking which is the image that's on those mugs. It does say it's dishwasher, freezer, and microwave safe. That's good to know, and that would not have been true of Spode back in their early edition. I see finally that there is a spice jar in this whole contemporary collection. So we have found some of those, but the search for other early Spode went on. We got several plates. So these are done in the 1830s to the 1850s. They are often either blue or green or black in color. As I say, they have the floral pattern about an inch thick, usually around the rim, and then a beautifully executed central design of Aesop's fables. And though I have wondered where did they get these, they are not simple copies of any illustrator I know. They apparently had their own illustrator create these pictures. One of them is the fascinating scene on a plate that is some 8.5 inches in diameter. Is the story of the lion, the bear, and the fox. A lion and bear came to each other at a water hole, and there was a question of which of them was going to be able to drink or to drink first. And they got into a huge fight, and were in the midst of it, really mauling each other, when they noticed a fox simply standing by nearby. One of them said to the other, "You know, the only winner in this fight is going to be that fox over there. Why don't we just quit and stop hurting each other?" Wise advice. Another of those transferware plates, this one from 1835, dated, I believe, on the plate itself, is of the fox and the grapes. If people know a couple of fables these days, they tend to know tortoise and hare. They might know grasshopper and ant. Maybe next on the list, if they know a third fable, it's the fox and the grapes. Though they probably don't recognize that the phrase sour grapes comes from this fable. The story, of course, is that a fox, hungry and thirsty, noticed some beautiful ripe grapes hanging from a trellis. The fox wanted them even desperately, leapt for them, and couldn't get them. So he took a little move backwards and took a running start and couldn't quite get them. Depending on how you tell the fable, he may have tried that many times over and just couldn't reach these grapes that he wanted. So he walked away, many will say with an air of debonair not caring, and his phrase was, "Those grapes are sour, I didn't want them anyway." When I'm looking for quick comparative examples on college campuses, I say something like, this maybe is like the young man who notices a young woman and would love to spend more time with her, and finally asks her out and gets a quick brush off, and comes back to his friend saying, "I didn't really want to date her anyway." That's sour grapes. There's a platter done in about 1835. It's a medium-sized platter, and it shows the crow and the pitcher. Another famous fable, and in this case, people may know the story, but they don't know that it's an Aesopic fable. A crow was flying over desert territory, became extremely thirsty, but kept flying, hoping to find water, a lake or a river, and did not find any, and was getting exhausted. He finally noticed something buried, half buried in the sand. It was a pitcher, half full of water. Well, he was delighted to come down and see that there was actually water in this pitcher, but it was only half full. He couldn't get at any of the water in the pitcher. He tried knocking it over, but it was too firmly implanted in the sand. He was ready to give up in desperation when he looked around and saw some stones nearby. Picked up a stone, dropped it in, and noticed that the water level rose. So he went on picking up stones until the water was up at the level where it could nourish him. People will sometimes say necessity is the mother of invention. This crow got a bright idea and was able to help himself out in tough circumstances. There's also a large platter, some 10.25 inches across, in this series done by Spode in the 1830s. This pictures the mountain in labor. This fable comes to us from Horace, though it is in the original groupings by Aesop. There's where we know it best. People around are noticing that mountains are grumbling, and they try to decipher what is this roaring of mountains. And they finally realize that the mountains are giving labor. They are a woman in labor and about to produce. So they gather around where the likely production of this mountain is going to come and expect great things out of a mountain. What comes out is a mouse. Horace uses this in his literary writings to say that with a lot of my competitors, there is a lot of rumblings like a mountain, and what comes out is a ridiculous mouse. It has given rise to a much quoted Latin line, parturient montes nascetur ridiculus mus. The mountains will thunder, what will be born out is a laughable mouse. It's a rather unusual scene to put onto a large platter. One has to look carefully to see the little mouse coming out of the opening in the mountain. We have two soup tureen lids, really carefully crafted, 5.5 inches across in one case, the other is a little bit larger, with gold workings on the handle raised up from the glass dome of this soup tureen lid. One of them pictures the fable and adapts the scene very nicely to the curvature of this lid, a domed lid. It's the story of the oak and the reed. A proud oak tree looked down on some reeds a few feet away and said, "I'm so sorry you're so far away from me. I wish I could protect you better, you poor things." The reeds tended to answer, "Well, we'll look to ourselves, you look to yourself." Soon enough, the storm came, and the oak, of course, resisted mightily until the oak was finally upended from its roots and died. The reeds, in the meantime, bent with the wind, and when the storm was over, were there to enjoy the next day. There is a question about when you want to say, "I will not break," and when you want to say, "I will not bend." Another of these lids, larger, 11 inches long, has the same kind of raised handle, a same domed characteristic. It features the story of the tortoise and the hare. In this case, it's not as so often pictured, let's say the hare sleeping along the road and the tortoise walking by. This rather, maybe because of the artist's needs for how this picture would fit on the domed lid of this tureen, has the hare and the tortoise confronting or looking at the fox, who is often enough traditionally either or both the starter and finisher of this race. So it's a quite peaceful scene in this case. There is none of the sort of exasperated, hard struggling of the slow but sure tortoise, none of the sort of finger-shaking shame on you to the rabbit. It's a nice pastoral scene. Might fit well for a view before you enjoy your good chicken noodle soup. Other than the huge platter we got from Barb Markussen, our biggest piece in our Spode collection is what's called a fruit bowl comport. Really large, 11-inch wide bowl with a very sturdy stand. This is a particularly fascinating piece because it illustrates two fables, and as do the other pieces, goes out of its way to put a marker on the back of the piece saying Aesop's Fables and telling you which fable it is. In this case, as I say, there are two of them, both noted. One is the story of the lion and the fox. We've already heard that story in a different scene about the lion pretending to be sick. In this case, pictured with all sorts of animals surrounding him and the fox standing at a distance. The other is the leopard and the fox. A leopard, very noble and proud, was looking down on a much smaller fox and said, "There is no comparison between the two of us." The fox, ever clever to find a response, says something like, your skin is pocked with marks, and they're very pretty. It's more my mind that has many holes and pieces to it, and it's a lot cleverer than your mind. So you may have the skin, but I have the wit. Many fables are, of course, contests between two characters, one of whom makes an aggressive statement and the other has a clever answer, one-upping that original statement. There's yet another platter about the crow filling his pitcher. The most recent set of acquisitions came from someone on eBay, and this is the way it has worked in so many areas of fable collecting for me. I might find one work being advertised on eBay. I show interest in it or purchase it, and the seller will come back saying, oh, I've got more where that came from. In this set of items that we found most recently on eBay, there are two sets of plates. Unfortunately, I had hoped but couldn't tell before we purchased them whether they were eight different scenes on a set of eight plates. They're unfortunately the same one. The story on this set of plates is the story of the lion in love. It's a sad story. A noble lion happens to fall in love with a farmer's daughter, pretty young woman, and he is really smitten in love. He comes to the farmer and says, may I marry your daughter? The clever farmer says, oh, what a wonderful idea. Our family has never had a lion. It would really make our family noble. I do have a little concern as I see you, and that is my daughter is very tender. Those nails and claws of yours, or those big teeth of yours, without your even being aware of it, could hurt her at some point. The lion, so much in love, said, that's not a problem. I'll be happy to get rid of the danger there. And so the lion went off and had his claws removed and had his teeth removed. And then came back and said, as well as he could with gums that had no teeth in them, that he was ready to marry the farmer's daughter. The farmer pulled out a club and beat the lion mercilessly. Sometimes our love gets us blind and we give away what is really ours and lose ourselves in the process.
I also noticed that there were three plates, and I know the plates were the reproductions, but they were in different colors.
Yes.
And being able to see the representation and how color in this transfer process makes a huge difference in sort of the overall vibe of the piece.
Yep. And that, I mean, as I got to experience more and more of Spode, I mean, when I found that contemporary redoing, it was a blue plate, and I thought, oh, that's great. And then later on, a couple months later, here's a green version of that plate. My, oh, my. And then the one I mentioned from Karen Early, I think, was a gold or yellow version. Whoa, or red. So that is fascinating. And you lead into a question for me. Some of our earlier ware is green, most of it. And some of it is more black. I feared when we got the green stuff, oh, no, this is contemporary. This is not the 1830s. No, it's from the 1830s or the 1850s. But I wonder about the difference in color back then, what that meant. With books, it might have meant that the printer that day didn't have the right kind of ink and just went ahead and printed it in a different color. I would guess with Spode there is something far more important going on. One last platter has yet another scene, and this is of a mother sow having given birth to a number of piglets. A wolf arrives and says, I'm a doctor. I might be able to help you and your piglets in your present state and theirs. And the sow answers back and says, thank you, doctor, but we're doing just fine. The best thing you can do for our family is to get out of here. There are yet more Spodes, but those are the ones I was able to catch offhand before our conversation today. One thing I wanted to mention, Brian, my sister-in-law, a chef and a collector of several sorts of things in life herself, immediately said when I was asking her about some of these things, watch the markings on the back. Mm-hmm. And that's not just Spode's label that says The Lion and the Fox, you know, 1835. There are small indentations. And the real collectors of tableware will know how to read those. I really don't even know what they mean, but they certainly have something to do with the evaluation of tableware like this. High class, really old tableware. Watch the markings on the back. So if I have time in life to become more of a connoisseur of tableware, that's one of the next places I will go. I still hope I can find the origin of these illustrations somewhere in books or prints. But up until this time, it looks to me like they engaged a person to create new designs, I don't know on what sort of medium, and then apply them to this bowl or dish or platter. But it's certainly a remarkable technique of having produced in glass something of the quality of good paper printing.
Yes.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, they are really something to be seen. So if you are ever in the Omaha area, it really, really would be a great thing to come to Creighton University and view some of these Spode objects, artifacts, in the Carlson Fable collections and the archives and special collections at Creighton University's Reinert Alumni Library. Thank you. I appreciate your time and can't wait to hear more.
Brian, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Well, that's all the time we have for today, Father Carlson. I'd like to thank you for this fabulous discussion of the stories behind some of the Spode pieces in the Carlson Fable Collection. We hope to be back in the studio to share more discussions in future episodes of The Glories of Stories. So long, everyone. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast episode are not those of Creighton University and its departments and divisions, but are the opinions of our hosts and guests alone. Copyright 2025 by Creighton University, all rights reserved.